Bit of word association being played. Collingwood progressing. Carlton exciting with injuries looming. Tigers stalking. Freo need no worse than a soft five. There's a bit of vaux rogue to Freo, Grant. And for you, is this week's Collingwood-Carlton game the biggest between the two clubs in 20 years? If Carlton wins, their fans will be right up and about. If Collingwood wins, we'll be saying, here come the Pies. So it just started to creep out of your subconscious there. Mm. Is the Collingwood-Carlton thing still real?
I think it has been. There's been a number of, well, absolutely. The modern day rivalry has been based on anything but on-field sort of challenge, I suppose, or success. It's these two teams haven't been up at the same time for a long time. I've got no doubt that it sits in the hearts and minds of the supporters. They still wear that. And I reckon by the time we get to Sunday afternoon, it'll be very interesting, because I've got no doubt that Carlton, we were just waxing lyrical about Carlton, and I think they're playing some really good footy. I did say only a couple of weeks ago that I thought they were vulnerable. And they're still going to be tested against the best opposition. But I think they'll be tested on Sunday. I think that'll be a really big challenge for Carlton. I think that Collingwood will be up and about. I think they've got a brand that will challenge any side when they execute it well. So and off the back of a really good road trip, there's some momentum there for Collingwood as well.
So did you induct young Collingwood players into the Carlton rivalry, hatred, whatever it is? Because it's not natural anymore that a kid growing up would see it that, like, there's rivalries all over the place. West Coast and Collingwood played through your time a stirring set of games, and you know those finals appearances over time, dating back to, you know, the end of a game at Subiaco all the way through to a grand final. Is how do you keep it relevant, something that lives in the soul of the two teams from the past?
Well, I think the relevance is more on the other side of the fence. Like, it really is more in the supporter groups, because week in, week out, you're preparing to be your best, but you're preparing to take on the opposition. So whatever the opposition that you're facing, you look at their strengths, they're faceless. You look at their strengths, you look at their weaknesses, how they play, and you try and work out exactly how you're going to best their best with, and then get the game on your terms. I didn't go to the rivalry very often at all. We would often look to bring past players or people back into the environment, and that would bleed out of those players if we were heading into a Carlton game. And Nick Maxwell, in his role, sort of leadership and culture, he would be looking to milk that as well. So that's where it would bleed in, and it wouldn't be front of mind. It wouldn't be it wouldn't be a really strong element in the preparation, but it would be there. You know, just on the edge of your consciousness, and there was someone would say, like, about the old days and this, that, and the other, and it bleeds through. But personally, it was never a big part of my preparation against Carlton. Yep. And we had a really good record over my time, you know, late as a player and then as a coach.
So if I asked you, so word association, who's the natural enemy? Go.
The natural enemy is Carlton. Yeah, I've always, Essendon was always high up there for me as well. But, the natural enemy is, it depends when you were born. Yeah, because, younger Collingwood fans would be saying West Coast after 2018. Yeah.
There'd be another group who'd be Brisbane Lions.
Correct, from that little part. But, yeah, I saw it on the app, and I thought, wow, they played, like, when Collingwood were playing, I saw they were playing Carlton. I thought, that's something to look forward to. Like, I'm actually not sure if I'm on the game, but I'll be sitting and watching that. That's with real interest. You know, obviously some skin in the game on one side, but, you know, really interested in Carlton and how they're developing. I think that's a And it's not a bad time slot too, when everyone gets a chance to put the feet up in front of the fire and or get to the game and have a look.
There's a lot of great cultural stuff coming through, which I'll share with you in a moment. Shane's with us on the road. Welcome to you, Shane.
Good morning, gentlemen. Bucks, question for you, mate. Sydney seems to be a real enigma of a side at the moment. Their forward line and their forward structure is dysfunctional at best.
Mm.
Is it time that the Swans put Franklin into the Matty Richardson role and play him up the wing, and because he's probably our best field kick, and get the ball down into the hands? I mean, we seem to be a lot more structured when he's not in the forward line anymore.
Look, it's a great point, and obviously you're a Sydney man. They're not popping at the moment. They're not finding the synergy and connection, and then the what that brings to the team and to your performances. They look like they're really grinding it out. Although, John Longmire was actually talking about the fact that outside of the second, he didn't mind their contest and the way that they went about it, and probably was coming from a perspective of rating Carlton as an ongoing strength and the vibe that they're getting at the moment and the sort of football that they're playing. So, but I think Sydney are really, they've got some great attributes, but they're just not moulding together well as a team. Not as well as we have seen them in the past, and definitely not on the trajectory that we thought. Individually, young players are coming through, but they're just not playing great team footy at the moment.
Here's the cultural stuff, Bucks. I love this stuff. My two boys, 11 and 13, are very aware of the rivalry between Carlton and Collingwood. It's Dad's responsibility to teach them how much we hate Collingwood, Craig's in Blackrock. The rivalry is real. Mum always topped off a present to me with a bag of my favourite snacks, Mars bars. Mum stopped buying them when Mars sponsored the enemy, Dave. I won't even drink Carlton draft because of the word Carlton. Oh, it's real, Jared. It's real. Nicole's a Blues supporter. I probably can't read that line. It needs to be discussed at club level. Us supporters understand it and breathe it. That's from Benjamin. Another childhood memory, my Italian cousins and uncles, a mixture of feisty Collingwood and Carlton fans who took me to the 1988 qualifying final on a Sunday. Blues won by a few goals, but the crowd was enormous, up near 90,000. That's from Dom. Jared, losing the 100th and the 125th year games for Collingwood against Carlton still eats me.
Mm.
And it is real. It is very real. As a Collingwood supporter, it's about real footy hate. Can't wait for Sunday, Phillips in Portsea.
I wonder how many of those, and they're all great anecdotes because they are so real to the individuals that are sharing them. And that is, it can be a very visceral individual feeling.
Yep.
I wonder how many of those people understand that it started because Collingwood was a low-lying area and Carlton were a high-lying area, and Carlton's effluent and everything else used to run down that way, and they apparently used to be told about that. So this was a very suburban, like, about the lay of the land, about where you lived, about what your community was made up of or not made up of. That's where, if you want to talk about where things start, that's where it starts. So Collingwood were always made to feel lesser by Carlton. Carlton always saw themselves as above. At least that's what I was learnt and told through the Collingwood experience over 125 years. So that is where it comes from. I wonder how many people that have shared their modern day, challenges and this is real, this is real. I wonder if they're aware of that, because that is the genesis of this rivalry over a long period of time. But I don't see how actually bringing that up to the playing group. It's in your history. It's in your induction. It's part of what you talk about the chip on our shoulder as an organisation, about where we began and how we were viewed, and the community, how the community was viewed. But I don't see how that actually helps you go out and play a game of footy for a couple of hours. It definitely builds a connection to your history, but you don't do that against an opposition. You do it for yourself. But it is part of it, but it doesn't become part of the week as such. It's part of the ether that you're a part of and the culture that you develop.
Terrific Collingwood and Carlton messages, which I'll share as we go. I taught my two children to follow two teams, the Mighty Magpies and anyone who's playing Carlton. That's Andrew from Altona. The worst mistake Carlton ever made was to lend Collingwood the money to start their club. Then again, without them, we wouldn't have had so many wonderful memories. Buck still hates Carlton and I love it. As a Collingwood kid from 1979 to 82, there was something wrong with Carlton's success. It was unnatural and, dare I say it, unholy. They had clearly done a deal with the devil. Buck stuffed the flag this year. Let's just beat Carlton on Sunday. That's better than a flag. Send the Blues back to Lygon Street crying. My brother-in-law once left his Carlton scarf in my car. I had to check the oil, and instead of using a rag, I used his scarf. My daughter won't even play for our local club because they are the Belconnen Magpies. It lives in fandom, that's for sure. 0433 98 11 16 Temper, a mattress like no other. On Tuesdays, we reach across the divide, the sporting divide, the cultural divide between Melbourne and Sydney. Andrew Voss is the host of 1170 SEN Breakfast in Sydney. Hello to you, Vossie.
Yeah, hello, Jerry. Yeah, home of sporting culture. There's no way we'd have that sort of banter between fans. There's great respect, you know. It wasn't a joke. If you would, you know, never run over someone riding a bike, a Collingwood supporter on a bike, because it's probably your bike, wasn't it, once said?
Yes.
Yeah. I went into a Lego store down in Melbourne once, and they had, it was a MCG recreation of the MCG, and did they have the Collingwood, that Collingwood players or fans, not players, fans as prisoners or something. What was that about? In a Lego display, in a department store.
You're hitting the right cultural markers here, Vossie. Hey, we have, the AFL has a chicken wing tackle to deal with tonight in the at the tribunal. Wow. So it's a lot of years since there's been one. Is Chris Judd's probably the most famous to fall foul of the chicken wing? He got 4 weeks back in the day. Thank you, tortured puns.
Falling foul, wonderful stuff.
Where's the NRL landed with chicken wing tackles for a while? They were a scourge.
Yeah, you're pretty much eradicated, to be honest, Jared. For a period there, we were just in a frenzy naming tackles. The Prowler and all these sorts of ones that we had. But the chicken wing was one that largely has disappeared. I can't think off the top of my head. We've had too many in the last couple of years. So whatever we've done, and there were charges on the minor scale. It's not like they came in heavy-handed and you got 6 weeks or anything like that, but there was a consistent review looking for tackles of that kind, and you suffered some penalty. So, look, there's so many different tackles that, honestly, the poor old referees and umpires in your case, I mean, there's no way in the run of play they can identify these things. You do have to watch back because they are technical, you know, wrestling manoeuvres that have found their way into the game, and there's probably still more to come. But you've just got to go through a process and deciding what you want your game to look like. And I know as a lifelong rugby league fan, some of the tackles that I witnessed over the last decade or so, I've just said, well, that's not the rugby league that I fell in love with, you know, the knees on the back of the calves and all different holds and that sort of thing. So you really do have to decide as a collective how you want your sport to look like. Yes, the games evolve, but you have to decide if it wants to evolve in a direction you want it to remain an attractive spectacle, I suppose, is one way of putting it.
Yeah, so there's tonight's tribunal verdict will be interesting. We had a day yesterday, Vossie, out of round 10 of the AFL where the umpiring was regarded as a flaming mess, and people thought the game was burning down. You've actually had the extreme of death threats towards referees.
Yeah, Peter Blandys has come out, you know, declaring this absolutely abhorrent behaviour by some sections. A couple of referees have ended up on the end of death threats this year. Now, we did a little bit of digging today just to get the message out there, because potentially there might be some sort of, you know, coward or troll listening. And we had Lee Hadjipantelis on from Brighton's lawyers just to explain exactly where you're headed in the legal field. If you think, you can put some sort of veiled death threat across social media, if you are caught, you're not just facing fine. If you are charged and appear before a judge having issued a death threat, if it's proven, you are looking at custodial sentence. It's not something that gets, it's not an affray charge. It won't be dismissed lightly. So be very careful how you choose. It is just a game. It is just a sport. And we read out a lovely quote this morning, Jared, on our program, on our breakfast show, that football, and this was in relation to soccer, an Italian coach once said, football is the most important thing of the most least important things in our life.
Yes.
So I thought that was a nice way of putting it. You know, we appreciate the ball. It is it's life and death, but it is sport of the really important things in our life. It's not the, it's the most important of the least important things. I think that's beautifully put.
Yeah, that's a nice phrase. So where are we with Melbourne Storm after two hidings?
Ooh, yeah, by some considerable space. It's almost uncharted territory, really, this early in a season. Now, it's fine to say a couple of the big four have been out these last couple of weeks, but it's always been about the man coming in, not the man out at Melbourne. You know, they pride themselves on that. You pull on the purple jersey and all the rest, it's gone by the by. It certainly puts a question mark over them. I tell you what it has done. While I have Melbourne winning the competition this year was my pre-season forecast, I'm now saying the competition is Penrith to lose because they're now 4 points clear at the top of the ladder ahead of Melbourne and the Cowboys. While Melbourne have started without a couple of their major players, Penrith got through the opening rounds of this season without their main man, their number seven, Nathan Cleary, coming back from shoulder surgery. So they've played without their main man and excelled, and Melbourne have played without a couple of their main men and crashed. So there's a big comparison, a big contrast there. Penrith now raging hot favourites to win back-to-back premierships. And Melbourne definitely, it's unusual to say, a team sitting second on the ladder under pressure going into this week, which is Thursday night against Manly.
How did Craig Bellamy's decision to coach again next year play out late last week?
Well, it's great. I want him to coach forever.
Yes.
I'll just put personal cards on the table. I'm missing Wayne Bennett this year. So we've had Wayne Bennett as part of the fold since 1987. This is our first season since before 1987 that we've had without Wayne Bennett. So I'm missing him. So I think it'd be exactly the same if we lost Craig Bellamy. He's still got so much to give, whether he wants to give it, whether he feels like it's in him. But, you know, great coach, stability at Melbourne. There's going to be big change at the end of this season. You know, there's a lot of personnel leaving, Brandon Smith, the Bromwich brothers, Felice Kaufusi, to have that, the man at the masthead is fantastic for Melbourne and great for rugby league. Craig Bellamy is still one of the hands-on 16 people coaching sides in the NRL, and next season will be, 17 clubs with Wayne Bennett back in the fold.
I can imagine, I was thinking on Thursday, I can imagine him just year on year in March just poking his head in the door going, I'll go one more year. And we'll suddenly be 2027.
How could Craig Bellamy, seriously, we'd have to have a secret camera on Craig if he did give it away. We'd have to watch him in the lounge room watching football. Could he watch in a relaxed? How would he replace that game day fix that he has where he just lives on the edge? I mean, he loses it. He goes for a walk and all the rest. As I said, he's a rugby league treasure. He's an Australian sporting treasure. I'll go even further in regards to Craig Bellamy.
Yeah, I would concur with that. One more, Vossie. The swimming championships. So
yep.
The national titles at one stage were a staple of free-to-air during the golden generation of Australian swimming and a ratings, monstrous ratings success. This is a great generation for Australian swimming that has emerged out of Tokyo. The championships were on Amazon. They certainly created a stir. There's nothing like a soap opera and something of a love triangle, which had implications for the pool, and world records were broken. There are household names. So swimming has sort of reinvented an opportunity, but maybe without the full cloud of Rabs commentating on Channel 9 in prime time.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I was working at the Channel 9 network when swimming was in prime time, and they're not just household names. You know, they're identifiable in the street now. We may have great swimmers right now, and we do. And we might have the record-breaking Commonwealth Games later this year. And these swimmers are swimming world record times at the national championships. But I'll make the statement, I don't believe they're as recognisable as they were in that peak time when it was free-to-air coverage. I mean, that put faces to names and times and performance. And so they're more than just household names. They're instantly recognisable. Now, I don't think the same could be said if Mr. Subtlety Cook walked down George Street today, would he be, as a record holder, would he be harassed by, you know, people in the street wanting his autograph? My answer, you know, sadly for him, would be no, he wouldn't be. And I think that could be said of a number of our competitors. I mean, Ariane Titmus, of course, has had, you know, exposure through commercial deals, but there's a number of swimmers that just don't get it these days, and that has to be the common denominator here is lack of free-to-air coverage. Free-to-air coverage makes people stars. More viewers make people stars and give them higher profile.
Do you think it's hard to know. Do you think it could be recreated?
Well, I think it can. A good coverage, it's exciting. It's exciting to watch. And it's exciting brought, you know, Rabs did a great job all those years, Ray Warren. Because when you actually go to swimming live, and I've called swimming walking along poolside, like pool deck, I have called swimming, you are going at walking speed. So on television, you do need those virtual lines and know they're racing against the clock. And Ray did a great job at bringing every single race alive. So with decent crowd, well packaged, I have no reason, but I'm a sports fan, of course, yeah, Jared, yep. Like you. I have no reason to believe that delivered the right way, you know, packaged up 90 minutes or, you know, I think it could still work. Obviously, it could still work. But, you know, these days they go with their reality TV shows and all the rest, and they don't want to budge the news and you don't want to budge Current Affair and all those sorts of things that I'm against. I mean, I'm a sports lover. So, yes, I think it could still work on free-to-air, but I'm not going to hold my breath waiting for it. For it to return.
Now, there are great storylines and great characters at the moment, so if it was ever going to be reprised, it would be now. Vossi, good work. Thank you.
Love your work, Jared.
Andrew Voss across the sporting and cultural divide between Sydney and Melbourne. For City Power, upgrades continuing to provide reliable power supply. And a couple of you have asked around the details of tomorrow night's Community Coaches Virtual Forum. The website to register is AFLVic.com.au. So it's tomorrow night at 7:30. It includes coaches of the caliber of Paul Roos, Chris Scott, Nathan Burke, Adam Uze, and topics including leadership, culture, sustaining success, and player development. So broad conversations around which grassroots coaches might be able to pick up the tip or two as to what might be useful to you and what could be implemented at your club, with the overarching theme of exploring the harm that sports gambling can do to a generation who are being exposed to it like none before. So on that front, to a degree, is Ben Brown has put his toe in the coaching water. He's experienced a lot in his career. His sliding doors moment, I guess, was never more acutely before us than on Saturday during the twilight as he played his 150th game in a Melbourne Guernsey, where he's had, 20 matches for 18 wins. While his old team that didn't want him anymore are in the grip of rebuilds, and wins are few and far between. Always good to catch up with him. One of the great figures of the game. Ben Brown, great to have you on the program.
Thanks, Jared.
Congratulations on 150 games.
Thanks very much. Yeah, it was pretty exciting and something I, you know, looking back, and I had a bit of time to think about looking back at the start of my career. You know, I just wanted to get a game, you know, when I got in, and took me a few drafts to get there. So to get to 150 games, something I'm actually really proud of, and also something that, you know, I feel very privileged to be able to do. So, yeah, thank you for that.
Do you have a few people come along to mark the occasion with you?
Yeah, I had mum and dad over from Tassie for the weekend, which was great. They got to see it, and also obviously my wife and kids and a lot of my wife's family are over here, so it was great to have them and also a few friends come along. So, yeah, very good.
Lovely piece of symmetry. How do you find playing against the old mob?
Oh, I mean, it is a little bit different. You know, I've had a couple of cracks at it now, and I enjoy it. And the club's changed a lot.
Yeah.
The personnel's changed a lot since I was there, so, you know, looking around, there's actually not that many blokes that I've played with. So, you know, that maybe makes it slightly easier.
Do you get what comes from over the fence on a day like that?
Oh, it's very funny. I do hear a bit of what comes over the fence, given that I'm in the goal square generally, particularly at centre bounces. I did have one from the North cheer squad. Someone yelled out and had a go at me, and then The same voice yelled out a couple seconds later and said, "It's all right, Benny, I'll only do it for the next 5 minutes in the last quarter." I think, you know, there was that that lovely bit of banter that was suggesting that, yep, you're our enemy for the next 5 or 10 minutes, but after that we'll go back to being friendly.
Nice. So,
yeah, that was fun.
Without labouring the point with you, Ben, it's sort of hard to miss the sliding doors in it all, isn't it? As we were just having a quick look, 20 games at Melbourne, 18 wins, a loss, a draw, a premiership, an unbeaten start to this year, while North are doing things the hard way in the rebuild.
Yeah, I mean, it really is, and there is a certain degree of, you know, good fortune that comes with that as well. And I was really fortunate in my time at North Melbourne to get the opportunities that I did to play footy really early in my career there too. So, you know, there's definitely moments, I think, in anyone's career where you do have those sliding doors moments. And I have been really fortunate that the football club at Melbourne has been so supportive of me and has given me every opportunity to succeed. So, yeah, I definitely feel very fortunate for that.
So the club's in the middle of a 17-game winning streak, so historically this is starting to climb to be right up there. What would you say about the footy you're experiencing at the moment? Is it enjoyable? What's winning every week like?
it's definitely enjoyable. We're trying not to take it too much for granted, and I suppose focusing on every new week and every new opposition that comes up and the ways in which we can try and beat them, because it's still a very difficult game, even when you're winning and winning sort of weekly like we've been doing, but there's always a new opposition that's going to throw something different at you, and I think that's been the strength of ours over the last 17 or so games in particular, is that we've been able to I suppose re-guide ourselves, and the coaches have been fantastic in terms of their presentations to us on the way opposition teams play and what they're going to bring against us, and how we can bring our strengths and put them on show as best as possible against those teams. And we know that we've got a really red hot opposition in Fremantle this weekend that we've got to take on. So, you know, there's always another opposition and always another challenge, and we know that the speed bumps are going to come at some point. So preparing ourselves for that's important too.
Do you, so the admiration from the football world is full on at the moment. We admire the great teams when they reveal themselves. Would you be aware of that?
We're obviously aware that, we feel like we're going well at the moment, but as I said, it can change. It can change just like that. The moment you take your foot off the pedal, and I think everyone at the Melbourne Football Club is pretty aware of that. And I think, you know, the tough times that the club's been through, I think, guides your actions and presence. And a lot of the guys that are playing in this team now, I mean, you look at Max Gawn and Tom McDonald and Christian Petrarca and Clayton Oliver, Jack Viney, they've all been there when the club was really in a difficult stage of its life cycle, and they want to do everything they can to make sure that they're leading the way in terms of keeping us up at the top end of the ladder. So I think those experiences do harden you and do prepare you for moments like this. Do we hear about the external pressure and the external side of it? It's impossible not to hear it at all, but we try and minimise that noise and just try to focus on the week-by-week aspects of our training and what we need to bring against particular opposition, as I said, and the ways that we can bring our own strength to the table. So those are the things that we try to focus on.
And Ben, in an excellent team, the pressure for spots, and there's pressure in that forward line. You've got an oversupply of more than capable players. So just thinking through the course of your year, you have the COVID interruption, you come back through the VFL, you get suspended. Do you feel that the pressure to maintain your place in the team?
I think there's always pressure that comes with an AFL career for anyone. and we are really fortunate that we do have some fantastic, particularly key forwards on show and playing in the VFL at the moment. We've got Sam Wiedemann and Mitch Brown, who's and young fella Jacob Van Rooyen, who's come into the club as well. And I think all three of those guys in the last 3 weeks have kicked six or more goals in a game. So when you've got that kind of pressure, it does put pressure on you to perform to an extent. I think the benefit for me has been in the last couple of years. I have gone back to the VFL a couple of times, and it's probably that recognition that you've just got to work hard and put your head down at training each week and try to keep things as normal as possible to give yourself the best opportunity to perform. And I suppose staying in your own lane and staying in your own silo there, and trying not to focus too much on the external noise is important. So that's probably what I've learned. And I've also learned that, being in the VFL is not the worst thing that can happen to you. A lot of the time you can learn from those experiences. So, those things have probably made me a little bit more of a level person in the last couple of years, which has only been beneficial for my game, I think.